July 11th, 2017, Planning Commission. First order of business is a pledge of allegiance followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Next on our agenda is the planning director comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time except for the, on the work session agenda, you'll see three items. The first one is residential plan community zoning tax amendment. The second one is strategic zoning initiative. You may recall a couple months ago we handed out a sample of that from what Hanover County did. Mr. Newman will be doing a brief discussion on that. And last, a small home business ordinance discussion with Brad Robinson.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Stewart? Thank you. Next item is our public comment section. Anybody wishing to come to speak about anything other than the items on our agenda may come forward and state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll start our work session. The residential plan community zoning text amendment, Brad Robinson, senior planner.
And Mr. Chairman, I have to add that the applicant is not here. I'm not sure if the planning commission wanted to defer this discussion until next month when the applicant is here. Left it vague as to whether he would be here or not.
Yeah.
But I advise him that he would be present.
Yeah. I would think that might be the proper thing to do since we do have an applicant that wants to talk about that. But I would also, after looking at the thing, to recommend that that the planning department take an actual look at this themselves and also at the same time examine the comprehensive plan to see if we need to make any adjustments there too. And I think that Mr. Payne probably needs to look at, because these changes was written by someone other than the planning department.
Or an attorney.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a perfectly appropriate comment. I have been concerned for some time that I think we've reached a point where the county needs to consider having at least some areas that can have greater density. What that ought to be, where it ought to be, that's not up to me. But I think the time has come that we need to consider that. So I'm not going to tell you that I have an opposition to this increased density. That's what the density ought to be, that's his issue in my mind. But the idea of allowing it is certainly something I think would be appropriate for you to consider. Your comment that you let me say this. With that said, I really don't particularly like the way this proposal was drafted. Just the drafting and say, I wouldn't do it that way. But that's not to say that if you think that the density ought to be increased, Mr. Stewart agrees, the staff agrees, maybe it should be done, but doing it your way makes a lot more sense to me.
I think Mr. Summer has a question also.
I guess, looking at tonight, is there more to this, to your presentation, than Mr. Schimpf's proposed zoning text amendment? Is there information we should get besides the specifics of his request?
We received this application last Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
So essentially,
you all have got it at about the same time as we have.
So, I mean, if there's nothing in here besides this particular, I guess, request.
I put together just a short presentation to talk about the densities and the zoning.
My suggestion would be that you not take it up formally. The chairman's suggestion of referring back to staff to a more general analysis of the subject rather than applying it to this text would make a lot of sense to me and do it. Mr. Schindler wants to be here later, then he's got an opportunity to talk to his concerns. And staff got an opportunity to be on a more wide-ranging basis with what they think might happen. So I think your suggestion is good.
Well, I think we need to see the balance between the comprehensive plan and the zoning.
Absolutely.
Right, and if we're talking about greater densities, we need to look at that holistically, not just this very specific thing that he's looking at.
That's right. You just said it better than I did.
Just a dumb forestry, you know.
Well, you got to look at it.
So, I don't know whether we really need to look at what Mr. Robinson has tonight, because I think we need to look at it as a whole, as he said, holistically and so forth like that, because we've got some areas of the county where community planning areas may not be advantageous for a higher density, and it may have to be different in different areas.
There's some disconnect between what the comprehensive plan calls for right now and what the actual densities actually are, particularly since we've just limited the PUDs.
Yeah. Well,
that
was one of the reasons I suggested we should wait.
Yeah, and that was his point in his text amendment, I think, was
so
we don't match the comp plan,
which is
illegitimate point to bring up.
But the question is whether his proposal is
right.
On the comp plan. Perfect.
My point is that if you ask me whether I would endorse this concept, subject to Mr. Stewart's more educated recommendation, yes, I would. Would I recommend this text? The answer is no. So, and my guess is Mr. Schimp would say, I don't care what the text is as long as it accomplishes the subject. So, I think there's a suggestion.
But I think we need to have both of them coordinated at the same time.
I agree with you 100%, Mr. Chairman.
That's the information I have tonight.
Well, we can take a look at that, and you can show us that. We can take a look at that, and that may give us a little bit of idea, because I want to take a look at the comprehensive plan compared to what he has too, because we've only had it a few days, and so I've looked at it a little bit, but not deep enough.
Okay, so this text amendment, of course, stems from an application that we have received. So, currently in the zoning ordinance, these districts that you see on the screen allows the densities that you see on the screen. The densest availability we have is between the R3 and the R4 districts. You see in R3, we currently provide for 2.9 dwelling units per acre. In R4, we allow for that same density if you have public utilities available. It's less than that if it's served by private utilities. So as of right now, from the districts that are in the zoning ordinance, the 2.9 dwelling units per acre is the largest density someone could ask for. Now that's not talking about the planned unit development district, the PUD district. As you'll see on the screen, the PUD district goes into more specificity regarding the type of dwelling. So single family versus townhouses versus multifamily. You can get more density depending on what type of dwelling you're proposing. And again, you recall the recent text amendment to limit the PUDs to Zion Crossroads area. And then in the comprehensive plan, this is currently what the community planning areas allow for. Zion Crossroads, 10 dwelling units per acre. This request for this text amendment, which involves the R3 district, would have been geared towards the Robin or the Lake Monticello district, as you can see, which the comp plan spells out state zoning ordinance part. But they, if you're calling a previous green zoning ordinance part, it only allows you to do that. So that's, the difference is here is where this request is coming from. But again, as you saw on the previous slide, you can get some greater density.
But with that density and that comprehensive plan, since we changed the headlines for that is PUD, but then it goes down into the different areas, some of that would have to be eliminated from the comprehensive plan now with our new ordinance as far as the PUDs only in the.
And so in all these districts, the allowable density or the recommended density, I guess, from the comprehensive plan fails to match what's actually allowable
with the zoning
per our zoning ordinance.
Now, in A1, we also, one per 2 acres is on the road, right? Because I think if it's off the road, it has to be 10 acres.
Well, you can have it off the road, but it has to be on, it has to be a minor subdivision.
Right, exactly. But I'm under normal zoning.
For conventional subdivision, exactly.
Okay. So that's something to think about. And like I said, I think that the planning department needs to look at this more. And I think Mr. Payne needs to look at it more. And I think we need to do it comprehensively with the comprehensive plan. And need to find out what we need to take out because of the change we made as far as the PUD for the design structure.
Thank you.
By the way, Mr. Chairman, just for your interest, I'm not entirely confident that this application really has is appropriate procedurally. My guess is that Mr. Kim really didn't care much whether you considered this as the one and only way to do this. It was probably more like getting your attention on this issue, thinking that he succeeded.
Okay, the next item is strategic zoning initiative. Mr. Newman will be presenting that.
Just a moment.
Try it again.
Microphone and projectors. How you day, Jay?
No, it's not.
It's really not.
I can do an interpretive dance. That would be at some point.
How did you make me do that?
There we go.
All right, forget that.
This is an idea that we found about from Hanover County.
FYI, this was presented to the Board of Supervisors back in May in the first session, and we're considering adopting some of the principles in this. Mr. Newman's going to present you what we presented to the Board of Supervisors and open it up for discussion.
Yeah. Hanover County had wanted to enhance their economic development, specifically in regards to agricultural properties that were located within strategic zones. To us, that would be having A1 properties within, say, the Zions community planning area, things of that nature. Basically, what this boiled down to was that folks who had agricultural properties within Hanover County in these strategic areas, they could could get their property rezoned to a more intensive use, say business or industrial zoning, but they wouldn't have to pay land use taxation rollback fees. They wouldn't have to pay for an increased zoning fee until such time as that industrial use or business use actually occurred on the property. So you could go ahead and get your A1 property zoned to say industrial 1, industrial 2, and you would continue to use it for your agricultural purposes until such time as you found someone who's willing to purchase your property and use it for industrial or commercial businesses. At that time, your rollback taxes would then apply, and then you'd have your reduced fees for rezonings. The issue that we have here in the county is that we currently charge a zoning fee, which is a $1,000 flat fee plus $50 an acre. As soon as you do a reapplication for a rezoning, and if you're in that land use taxation program, you're subject to rollback taxes. If you're using it for A1 purposes, but you get rezoned to I1, you still have that higher annual tax liability because you're now a higher industrial or business zoning, even if you're still using it for A1. So these combine to make that there's few incentives for somebody to change the property from A1 agricultural to industrial or business. Also, properties must be zoned commercial to be marketed by the state. We're trying to do that with some parcels, I believe, for Zion's Crossroads. And if they're A1, it's hard to market them.
Essentially, the State Economic Development Office is looking at parcels that are more ready made for recruitment. So this would enable those properties to be marketed by BEP.
Zion's Crossroads is our designated urban area adjacent to Louisa County, has many properties that are zoned agricultural, but that could be used for industrial or business purposes. And if we're trying to go ahead and institute a policy similar to what Hanover County did, where they would have the reduced rezoning fees, the rollback taxes wouldn't apply until such time as the industrial use occurs, that would give us a better tool to help market our properties. This is managed by the Virginia Enterprise Zones Department of the state, local government, encourages job creation, private investment in the target areas of the state.
The Enterprise Zone is a less desirable option. The strategic zoning initiative, it's really hard to visit an Enterprise Zone.
And you just about say that that's not a practical alternative for that county.
Could I ask one question?
Sure.
Would they apply to this for this future zoning request if needed? I don't know exactly how to word that. Maybe that's the way I want to word it. But would they come before the Planning Commission, and would that be done so that at a time that they could market it for the fact, knowing that it was already temporary approval?
But understand that there are certainly these incentives, procedural incentives and whatnot, that frankly, I question how valuable they really are. The one that is of obvious value is the amendment to the land use tax ordinance. Under our system, as soon as it's rezoned, it automatically, number one, subjects landowner to rollback taxes under the land use program, and secondly, it increases the tax assessment, or it subjects the property to be increased tax. The concept here, and there is a statute that authorizes this to be done, the county can amend the ordinance so that the mere fact of having the property rezoned does not take you out of land use. So you might have I-2 properties that's being used to raise corn, raise cattle, whatever, and you can do that indefinitely, continue the agricultural use indefinitely, and you would continue to qualify for land use taxation and wouldn't be subject to rollback.
Until it started to be used for the new
property. Well, yeah, and the idea is when the potential developer comes in and says, I'm looking for a place for my factory, he's going to look at places that are already zoned because that's easier for him. And if he comes to your farm and you got your cattle and your corn out there, but there's a sign on it that says this property's I-2, he can look at that and say, that is now ready for me to do my physical development. At that point, you get the rollback and tax incentive. Tax incentives go away. But you as a landowner don't have to worry about that because that's the problem of the guy that's going to develop it. And he's, you know, that's part of his business, so he's not concerned about that, or less concerned. So I think that's valuable to him.
So at what point would then, so I get it rezoned, it's I-2 now, but I keep on grazing cattle. And eventually, Barry comes and wants to build a widget factory there, and he seeks, so at what point does this, the rollback taxes apply? Does it start getting taxed at a higher industrial rate when the site development
plan? It's actually you have to be used.
Which, what point is that? When there's a site probably development plan?
The CO.
Yeah, it's somewhere.
Certificate of occupancy.
It's somewhere between the approval of the site plan and the CO. I'd have to go back to the statute.
And when the zoning fees and that stuff apply, because if the planning department is going to go out and do the work to find out whether that's going to be proper use for this area, if you bring in like VDOT and so forth to find out what type of entrance or whether the site distances and so forth like that.
That's what I meant about I'm not sure the practicality of some of this stuff in Cuban County. You have to remember Hanover County's situation. And I know a lot more about Hanover County than I used to because my daughter just moved there. And frankly, what I've seen about Hanover County has been very positive. They've been doing some really progressive things. Their solid waste program is really, really very user-friendly. But one of the reasons they can do some of this stuff is because of the nature of their geography. So that if you have your Zimmerland cattle farm and it's right next to Route 1 near Ashland, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that's sooner or later going to be developed to a higher level of the farm. We have a much less clear-cut situation than they do as far as that stuff is concerned. So I think the idea of the so-called streamlining the application and everything, I'm not saying you couldn't do things about that, but I think that's much less important in Cuyahoga County than it would be in a place like Hanover. Plus the fact that, frankly, your fees are consciously and they better be designed to defray expenses because they're not to comply with statute. And the other way to look at that is that if you are not charging fees that defray the costs, then the county is subsidizing that property. And I have a question of how much you want to do that. The other thing is that our review processes are already pretty streamlined. Now, I'm not saying they couldn't be more so, but this is not, I don't view this as a game changer in Cuyahoga County because our processes are really pretty straightforward and they're pretty expeditious. So I don't think that would drive the typical development away. So I think this is a very good program, well worth your reading. My own feeling about it is the principal virtue applied in this county would be the amendment to the language.
And that would,
right? Is that right?
That would be something the planning commission for if you don't get the supervisor.
But you could certainly recommend that as a planning tool.
Safe planning could get a little bit complicated for the fact of not knowing when to charge your fees and so forth like that. I mean, I'm very agreeable to the fact that if that's a way to do it, to put it so that it can be future use but still be taxed to land use up until that point. But I'm just trying to figure out what point do you charge the fees? If they've got to do the work, then the fees need to be charged at the time the work's done.
That's right, and I got to tell you that I have considerable experience on both sides of the development game because I represent developers too. my experience, the main thing that developers want is certainty. So when they come in and they look at your ordinance and your comprehensive plan and your process, they want to know. They want to know what's going to happen to them and be predictable. So if you come up with a program where they can't tell whether they're going to have to pay full freight on the fees for Black Acre as opposed to White Acre, they're probably going to be less than happy, not less than optimally happy. So again, if our system needs tweaking, by all means, let's tweak it. But on the other hand, I think a lot of this applies much more strictly in a locality like Hanover than it does here. Is that okay?
I believe so.
Proceed.
That's all I have.
That's all you have.
Sir.
I would commend it to your attention, and I would suggest you read it.
Thank you. The next item is small home business ordinance discussion. Mr. Robinson.
Staff was approached 3 months ago by some citizens. They did a leadership class. They did most of the research on the county's regulations for small home businesses, artisans, etc., and asked staff to take a look at some of the regulations and the ordinance to see if they could be made more flexible, etc. So we're trying to kick off the research, and we have on the screen some definitions that we've collected. We attempted to look at definitions for our surrounding localities and interest school regulations around the state. As of right now, our definition for home occupation, as it reads, it's being enforced as to where it specifically applies to the area just within the principal dwelling on the property. If you do anything in other buildings on the property outside of that, that kicks you into the category of being a small home industry, which requires a special use permit. And then as well as fine arts studio. And so some of the artisans in the county have concerns about having to go through the special use requirement if they're not doing A, B, or C activities, etc. So on the screen, the first line that you see there are existing definitions from Food Bank County. And then I've collected definitions from Alamar, Louisa, Gucci, and a couple of other counties. So I just wanted to open up discussion with the Planning Commission, what your thoughts, and to see if you'd like to bring staff.
I think the issue is, the Planning Commission may want to consider is the intensity. If the use takes place, home-based business in a shed, it's somebody's storing stuff from an online business. Is that the same as the brewery that we approved for some industry? Or is there some way we can want to update our home occupation regulations to incorporate a lower intensity use that takes place in outbuilding of property? Yeah.
And I think besides just intensity, is there a way, and I didn't specifically see it there, but is there a way to take into account risk? And by that, I mean, you know, if somebody's running an auto shop, there's environmental risks, oil disposal, and all these kind of things. If somebody is on a large, you know, kind of a, I have friends who have a pretty thriving business making soap. But soap involves lye and some other chemicals that have some risks. On the other hand, an artist studio or some of these things, I don't see the risk, the same risk factor. Is that something, and I don't have a problem with the special use permit if you're going to be getting 55-gallon drums of lye delivered to your house on a regular basis or disposing of 55-gallon drums.
I have worked with ordinances, particularly when I drafted them. Expressly prohibited as home occupations at a
my previous position, and then some localities on the screen, they break home occupation down to a major and minor category. So you'll see on the screen Alphon, Louisa, and then we didn't have a major category of home occupations and then the minor. The minor, and it's usually based on whether you have employees or visitors come to the property. Usually if you don't, if your home business doesn't involve any of those activities, you can make it a minor category.
And would a minor need a special use permit, or would that be by right?
Typically it does. In Albemarle, they have Class A and Class B. Class A is the one that's restricted to the dwelling and no outside employees. Because we complete some of it. Class B can have up to two outside employees, and it can use other buildings on the same property.
Still without a special use permit?
No, that requires a special use permit. Albemarle also has a series of supplementary regulations that would address things like you're talking about with chemicals. We don't have that concept, but Albemarle has done that. I don't think that's particularly necessary, but I think you're.
My concern is, you know, if somebody wants to, I mean, our special use permit application is $800. If somebody wants to do something because they like doing it as a home occupation 4 hours a week, it's going to take them a long time to recoup that $800, which encourages people to do this under the table, you know, quite honestly. And, you know, if we could somehow evaluate the risk, maybe even put a limit on the number of customers at one time so you don't have 50 cars there, because that has an impact on the neighbors. But having 6 cars there doesn't have any more impact on the neighbors than if I have 6 people over for dinner. So is there a way to do that we can, you know, meet the needs of the people out there without totally throwing our process out the window?
Well, one of the things that, and again, speaking to Albemarle, because I'm familiar with that, with Albemarle's, the idea is if you keep everything in the house, you live there. So you have a major incentive to keep the thing clean and safe and that kind of stuff. So there's an inherent tendency to minimize the what you described as the risks, nuisance factor. And also the things like overcrowding, volume, because it's in your house, and in Albemarle, not more than 25% of the floor area of the house can be used for home occupation. On the other hand, when you get up to, I'm going to put my gunsmith shop in the detached garage, then I have a lot more place for inventory. I can entertain a lot more people. I have a couple of employees. I've got to worry about their hours of operation, that kind of thing. It's much more like business.
Under our current ordinance, you could theoretically have a attached garage, and probably in a lot of cases be in the clear of being an SUV, but if the garage is detached, you have to get special.
Which is a ridiculous distinction in many ways. I would argue that's not a good distinction, because it's kind of, I get what you're saying.
There's a difference between Antioch Brewery and a lady out garage hitting pants or something.
Exactly.
Well, something really, really low impact from a land use standpoint, like a semi-retired lawyer, where he's got his little study and he sees a client once every couple of weeks, that kind of stuff. He does most things online. I remember one case that there was a guy that was some sort of financial type. I don't remember exactly what he did, but he did everything in his house, and it was quite an operation in terms of dollars, because everything was done online. So he didn't have any inventory, nobody ever visited, so he had no traffic, nothing like that. That's the sort of platonic ideal.
Sure. And I still remain of the opinion that we need to do our best to accommodate folks who service that the citizens, I think, deserve. And so if we can do it, I don't know all the legalities of this. Like I said, I'm just a dumb forester friend.
Like for instance.
Yeah, I agree.
Like for instance, in the art studio concept.
That's a great
that we
example.
Talked about earlier, and maybe people come there to buy paintings or so forth like that. But then also, some of these people occasionally want to have a painting class, so forth like that. That could be considered a home occupation business, so maybe once a month or something like that. The one concern would be, like, for instance, say in an R3 subdivision, okay, and they got a little short driveway, okay, and 15 people came, and all of them drove a different car. Would there be a parking problem or something like that? You probably wouldn't have the same situation out in an A1 area or something like that, because you basically got to have 2 acres with 300 feet of road frontage and stuff like that. So it might be a little bit different. So I just wonder, how would we coordinate? I don't really have a problem with it.
But I think the idea is to limit the amount of foot traffic on occupation as much as you can.
But I mean, that's something you would, that sometimes not going to do every single day.
Yeah. But when we create the HOA regulations and things like that, the county's not, doesn't have heard for.
We don't, and what everybody needs to do, the commission and all the public and everything, just because we have a zoning ordinance that says you can do it, that doesn't mean it doesn't violate your covenants.
All right, and that's, you know, that's what the choice you made when you moved in.
No, that's right.
That's
right. I think a lot of people don't understand that. I talked to the zoning administrator, he said it was okay.
So any place that has a homeowners association, we can have an ordinance, but the homeowners association could say no.
Sure.
Yeah.
You just need to make sure you say, the county said it's okay, but check with your governments.
Yeah, and you see that not infrequently, because it should. A lot of governments will say there's no commercial activity. So the semi-retired lawyer can't see that.
So how do you really determine what type of cutoff about major or minor?
That's a question for you and the board supervisors, kind of what level you're comfortable with. Other localities have addressed it in different ways. I drafted the home occupation ordinance in Dimity County in 2011. It seemed to work well. They allowed some use of the outbuildings, but it was based on the use was, view was based on the use of the main building, the kind of limit. So if you have a smaller house, you only cover the smaller.
I mean, I've known people right now in the county have had a little shed out in the back, and they make birdhouses, and they sell them to friends and so forth like that. So
in Dinwiddie, you weren't able to, like, move in a, say, a 600 square foot house and have, like, a huge 2,000 square foot business as a home occupation in a garage. So it's just different ways to address it.
Well, I suppose one way, we haven't discussed this, he stands up across the throttle, but you know he disagrees. But the two obvious mechanisms are simply describing what the limits are and the kind of thing you were talking about, some of the ways that counties have attempted to address that are things like you have to limit it to being in the house. Because if it's in the house, and like Alvar says, 25% of the house, that's an inherent limitation on what you can do. You know, how many people you can entertain at a time, how much inventory you can have, all that kind of stuff. That may not be perfect, but that's one way to do it.
Well, that might make sense for like an R3 or an R1. For an A1, I think that's overly restrictive.
Well, it may be.
In my opinion.
But I'm just saying, you can either do it by saying, here are the things that are going to limit the nature of this occupation, like the area, the floor area, or even the main house, or whatever, employees. Or you can have an evaluation of what the use is going to do. Far end of that is the special use permit. Now, you really want to have a good comprehensive look at the operation, that's the way to do it. The obvious downside to that is it discourages a lot of people because it's a somewhat cumbersome application, costs money, that kind of stuff. So if you want to have your fix lawnmowers and you can't fix them in your house, you can do it in the barn.
My wife's lawnmower.
I think the goal is not to change the character of the neighborhood, to be not as obvious as possible. So in Dinwiddie, that was by limiting these square footage of the main building, we also have a much smaller percentage that you can use without the top option that you can use a square footage of the building. So, that.
So in other words, say somebody had a 30 by 40 or 30 by 50 foot garage, but they only wanted to use, say, a 10 by 20 area for.
They were entitled to the area based on the square footage of the main building, still, regardless of the size of the garage. So it was still tied to the home.
Is there a way that we can look at what you did in Dinwiddie to take a look at and so forth like that?
The other way to do it, and I'm not real sure I can direct you to places it's been done, but I don't see why you couldn't do it, is to have a set of criteria, things like risk, chemicals, noise, stuff like that. But you'd have to have pretty specific criteria and leave it up to the zoning administrator's determination. That I don't have a problem with your using your shed. It doesn't multiply the impact of your product. But you're not going to be able to test those lawnmower engines because they make too much noise. That kind of stuff. You've got a soundproof building to put them in, and I determined as zoning administrator that noise is not a problem.
I think
that's a lot more sophisticated.
The main thing that this came up was some local artists were interested in sort of like a art type tour where you go to different artists' places. So forth like that. So it's I'd like to be as flexible as we can be with these people. And like I said, if somebody wants to say once a month teach a painting class for people or whatever like that, and they've got a little shed or garage out of the house where, and they have plenty of parking and so forth like that, I don't see a real big problem. But I just wonder how do you decide?
That would be more like the third alternative I just described. And you put availability of parking, noise generated by the activity, and paintbrushes typically don't make a lot of noise.
Frequency, the events.
In order to have an administrative determination like that, you'd have to have minimal discretion. So you'd have to have pretty specific criteria, and then it would be up to the zoning administrator to approve it or not. So it's a burden on the staff, frankly. And it does, it is going to require, if you do something that way, that you'd have to have very specific criteria. But that's another alternative.
I think that Mr. Stewart and the planning department really needs to take a look at this and, I know we want to be as flexible as we can with people because a lot of these things are really minor type things, but you have to do consider the safety of the people. You have to consider the safety of other people and the welfare of people. So security, safety, and welfare are one thing we have to consider going forward.
Like I said, I think it's time to take a look at this and see if we want to tweak it.
I know we had talked about put in different categories. You and I had talked about this some time ago. Something like that.
That's a way a lot, as Mr. Roberts said, a lot of counties have gone. Like I said, I think there's a difference between the small industry, like Antioch Brewery, and a lot of the smaller operations you see that really get a lot of patients that actually do well.
Are you finished your presentation there?
That was all.
I know there's a few people here that wanted to address this issue, so I'm going to give you a couple minutes to come up and tell us if what we're talking about and what you're talking about is the same thing, and realizing that we have to look out for safety, security, and welfare of the people as well as each individual. Did anybody want to come up and address us about this issue?
Several presentations that were made by the artists. Artisan Center of Virginia, which has been instrumental in creating artisan trails throughout the state. And if any of you are interested in looking at these, I have these. We have a question out as to whether this is optional to create the brochure, because that's the most expensive part of creating an artisan's trail. We still would be on a website, which would be one which is shows the whole map of Virginia and shows the different art and artisan trails. There are certain restrictions, which at the last meeting we attended to find out a little bit more about the creation of this. Every site is required to have a site inspection or visit by someone from the Artisan's Trail. All sites must have a bathroom or a porta potty. The place must be a safe structure. This includes farmers markets too. And as far as the economics of this is concerned, I have asked for a copy of the 2016 economic input that was put out by the Artisans Center of Virginia. So I hope to be getting a copy of that. And the total economic impact of the artisan industry in Virginia in 2014 was $572.2 million, providing $15.6 million in state tax revenues for the Commonwealth. And it would seem that this would fit right in with wine trails which have been created and connecting those with the art and artisans trails. And since Cluvanna is rural, I think one thing that we were concerned about and we found, and that was that probably these would fit more easily if you wanted to ever have a class, a small class, or have people come in the rural sections or the A1 sections. And this is where we happened to find out that there was a glitch with the special permit use. But there are areas and where I know artists live and I know they work, and it all should be more equitable. We should have these definitions so that they fit whether you're in a rural area or whether you're in a gated community, because it shouldn't be that the gated community doesn't pay these fees and someone who's out in an agricultural area, all of a sudden you've got to have a special use permit. Also, it needs to be...
Did you realize earlier that we can't do anything about gated communities or anything like that? We have no control over that.
Okay, but to me the logic is that if federal law takes precedent over state law takes precedent over county law, then it seems like if there's something for people that are doing business, it can't be this way here and this way somewhere else. So if you can fix it so that people who are in an area where it's much easier to have a few people come for a class occasionally, or to have some people come for an open house every so often, that I think would be acceptable. But I think it makes it very difficult, because we have a lot of artists in the county, we have a lot of writers. All of these things can be pulled together. So hopefully, in looking at where Fluvanna wants to go, these things fit right in, and hopefully we're not on the tail end of this. Hopefully we're in the middle, more or less, so we can get on the bandwagon too, because I think that those of us in the class felt at that particular time that this was something that we really wanted to get going in Fluvanna, something that fit in Fluvanna, something that was not disruptive or destructive of the environment in Fluvanna, and that it could bring economic bucks into
Fluvanna. Thank you.
If anybody wants to see any of these, I did have some samples.
Stuart, you want to take those, and then maybe we can take a look at it at a further meeting where we're looking at it and something like that. So.
Chairman, one thing that Ms. Morris raised that you may want to think about is the whole concept of agribusiness. Agritourism and things like that. There's some specific legislation about that. And have some of that, but we don't have very, very heavily developed law on that. But for example, if you want to teach a class on how to make wine, and you have a winery, I think that's already permitted by statute.
Correct.
So some of the stuff that she's talking about, and I don't mean to be denigrating what she said, but some of it.
Some of it already.
It would
depend if it's on like bona fide farm.
Yeah, if you got a, you know, you got a bona fide wine operation, winery, and that kind of stuff. You have a tasting room and that kind of stuff. That's all permitted. And you know, if you had a class on how to make wine, you'd probably do that. What wouldn't be agricultural is if you had a quilting class, because that's not agricultural. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but it falls under a different category.
And when they were talking about the gated communities, that is a legal document when you have a homeowners association.
Private restrictions are simply a matter of contract between the landowner and his neighbors. And there's nothing the county can do to say that those are not enforceable. Now, what the county does say is, we're not going to allow you to do anything that's more intrusive, if you want to call it that, than county law. If you want to be stricter than county law, we can't tell you not to. It'd be just like the guy that, you know, if you come to my house, you want something to drink, it can involve alcohol. You don't drink alcohol, then I come to your house, you can tell me put the beer away. You know, that's sort of a primitive analogy, but that's what it amounts to. Private property can do what they want.
I did talk to the lady from PBCC who had worked with both individuals who have both the miners here this week and Cunningham Creek. They were taking a course at PBCC, and she said, as I asked her if there was a possibility that maybe PDCC would get in on this artisan's trail, because there are all kinds of things that it takes you through, from how to start out, getting the money, getting grants, and so forth. And she said that could be a possibility. She said the art and artisan's trail is about where the winery trails were maybe 10 years ago, 8 or 10 years ago. So it's about that time to.
I'm going to have to stop you right now because our work session is almost over and we have to go into our regular session.
Okay.
And we are going to look into it. We have been looking to it, and I have been talking to Mr. Stewart. You had called me on the phone and I have been talking to him about it. But we need to come up with some type of solution. Some of the things that you're talking about are impossible, but some things that we might be able to do, and we're going to look into.
My folks, if there's somebody that really wants to talk a little bit more about this, there is the public comment portion of our regular session,
right,
which is happening in about 15 seconds.
We do have a public comment section during our regular meeting, and if you want to even say something, some other people that have already not spoken could come to the mic and we allow 3 minutes or something like that. So when that comes up, I will make that announcement. But right now, it's 7 o'clock, and we're going to go into our regular meeting, our first order of business of our regular meeting of the Planning Commission of Fluvanna County, July 11, 2017, is the Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is a director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few items to report here. We did have 5 public hearings last month, and they went to the Board of Supervisors on June 21st. Two SUPs were approved, and the 3 zoning
Okay, the next item is our first of two public comment sections for the night. One now and one will be at the end of our meeting tonight. This is limited to 3 minutes. You can come forward, you can speak on any issue about the county other than the things that are on our actual agenda tonight. Anyone wishing to come forward, state your name, your address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Gary Custer, 28 Cupbridge Road. Just wanted to talk just a whole about the special use permit. Mr. Stewart and I, we had a good conversation. Because there's a list, correct, of businesses that does not need special use permit. And for some reason, the studio artist has picked out off of that and it has to have one. But if I wanted to be a piano teacher, if I wanted to be something else, it's kind of in that gray area. My question to him is, how do I get this artist thing on the list? Because I can have an equestrian. I can, on my 2 acres, go out and get 15 horses and bring 100 kids over and teach them how to ride, and I don't need a special use permit. But if I bring 10 kids over to teach them art classes, I have to have a special use permit. That's the wordage and verbiage that I think is tripping people up on this whole thing, is to find out why do we have a list of things that doesn't need a special use permit. And I know the equestrian, if you go to the WISA, they have no special use permit until it gets to a certain number. And that might be one of the things. Hey, home business until you have X number of people show up. I don't know what it is, but that's one of the things with Fluvanna that I think is tripping it up, is why is this one thing pulled out? A whole list of things don't need it. And then the other ones, you don't know. So that's just what I, you know, to look at. I don't know who has those regulations on that, but if that's something you guys can look at to see why is that way, it might help you guys out.
Some of those have been this way a long, long time. And probably we wouldn't have known anything about it unless someone brings it to our attention. And so that's a good thing.
There's a reason the portals were adopted.
Yeah, there's some reason that doesn't mean they're still viable.
That's why we're taking it down.
Right, that's what I say. There's some reason why they picked that out.
Probably because one of them was agricultural and the other one was considered not agricultural.
It could have been, but you know, that's just something to look why that's written that way. And
that's why we're reviewing a lot of these things. We've reviewed definitions and so forth like that. So.
Good evening. My name is Linda Stager. I'm retired from my previous occupation, and I am now an oil painter. I do landscapes. I have a small studio. I do have people that come to visit me there. I normally sell elsewhere, but I really would like to have the option of having people just come by or being able to announce it. So I could have a party. I could have 50 cars to a dinner party or a celebration of a wedding. But if I need a special permit to have that many people just to come and look, and I can't afford to pay them to come and look when they're not really going to buy. So I want to ask a question, and that is, would it be helpful to you in making your decision if you had a survey of the people here in the county who want to do this and how it is right now for them?
I'm not really sure that would be advantageous, because this is something that we're already seriously looking at. Mr. Stewart and I have been talking about this for quite a few months and so forth like that. And of course, there's a lot of other things that's going on now. So sometimes things take a little bit longer than people think that they should take. And so sometimes we can't wave that magic wand. We have to look at the ordinances. We have to make them safe, so that it's safe for the person that has the property as well as people coming to the property and so forth like that. So.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else? If not,
that's not necessary. I think we need to
you. Anyone else? Seeing no one else coming forward, we will end our first public comment section for the night, and we will review our minutes from the June 13th meeting. Do I have any comments from our meeting minutes from the last meeting? If not, do I have a motion about the minutes?
I make a motion to be approved.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson for approval of the minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have three, four, and one abstaining, and one absent. The minutes are approved. We have no public hearings tonight. We have no presentations. The next item on our agenda is a site development plan, SDP 1704, Conmat Properties. Mr. Newman will be bringing this before us.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the commission. Before you, a site development plan for a concrete production facility with respect to approximately 10.5 acres of tax map 4A of 109. The parcel is recently rezoned to I-2 Industrial General. Adjacent properties are zoned to A-1 as well as I-1 Industrial Limited, and the proposed use would be allowed by right as medium manufacturing. So our definition of medium manufacturing that we have in the ordinance. Location will be up in Zion's Crossroads. Women's Correctional Facility is here. Zion's Crossroads is just over to the right, and the property will be located here. You should just look at the zoning. It's surrounded by A1 as well as some I1 properties. This is a closer view of the sketch plan. There would be a structure up here, an existing house that they would turn into a commercial spot for some of the contractors involved in the construction business, and they'd have more infrastructure and site development on the southern part of the property. The use is compatible with the goals of the Zion and CPA. The proposed structure size for retail operations is 2,500 to 3,000 square feet. The sheet metal pad building, the production machinery will be approximately 1,700 square feet. The retail aspect will be directed towards concrete-based contractors, not towards the general public. This is not like an Ace or Lowe's Hardware. It's specifically for folks involved in working with concrete. The existing one-story home may be used as an office area, like it would require an adjoining showroom, and that you would have a green and tan color scheme, so it would be identical to that of the adjoining correction facility. So in conclusion, this is a sketch plan for a concrete production facility. There would be approximately 10 employees on site. Here's to meet the requirements of our zoning ordinance. They would have, of course, have to get our final site plan approval, and staff recommends approval subject to three conditions. We have a motion for the applicants here tonight.
Federal VDOT requirements and so forth. See in the package that, and we had just changed part of the ordinance
to make sure
that this would comply. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Newman or the applicant? Thank you. We've looked at this property before. We've done zoning ordinance changes to make it possible and such things like that. So do I have anyone that wants to make a motion?
I make a motion to be approved.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson. For approval, do I have a second?
Mr. Johnson, can I ask you, Mr. Johnson, did you include the three conditions listed this afternoon?
Yes.
I have a motion from Mr. Johnson, including the three conditions listed in the staff report. I have a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0, and one absent.
Chairman, thank you. We truly appreciate all the help that you all have given the ordinance and staff. This help is great. We truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next item is site development plan 1706, Vanderlyn Recycling.
This is a site development plan request to expand an existing recycling center's mulching operation with respect to approximately 9.37 acres of two tax parcels, first one being tax parcel 5-10-6, and the other one being tax parcel 5-23, parcel A. Both parcels are zoned I-1 Industrial Limited and are adjacent to A-1 and I-1 properties. Again, located in the same general area between the Women's Prison and Zion's Crossroads. These are the two parcels in question. This is the existing Vanderlyn recycling facility here. The zoning, both these properties are zoned I-1, adjacent I-1, as well as agricultural properties. So their sketch plan, this is the existing site, and this is what their proposed use is going to look like. You'd have mulch piles here, here, and here, as well as machinery here. There'd be no new structures on this site. All the machinery, as well as the mulch piles, are mobile. Nothing will be set in stone. It can all be moved around. The use is compatible with our Zion CPA goals. They already have this existing use. They're just trying to concentrate it all on these two parcels. They've revised it. Their site plan, for concerns that the fire department had, they've added a 10,000-gallon water tank. They've improved their gate access. They've also said that they will rotate mulch piles daily so that heat doesn't build up. In conclusion, this is a sketch plan for a mulching operation. No new structures, again, all the machinery, the piles are mobile. Appears to meet all the requirements of our zoning ordinance. The final site plan must be submitted that complies with all the regulatory requirements. And staff recommends approval subject to the three staff conditions. We have our motion here, and the applicant is here this evening as well.
And they have basically took care of all the recommendations from the TRC committee as far as the moving around the piles occasionally and fire suppression and something like that.
Yes, sir.
The entrance, it seems to be okay and so forth like that.
Yes, so all the access will be internal. There's no access from public roads, anything like that.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Newman?
My only question is in relation to the moving of the mulch piles, which is a very important aspect of this. What's our enforcement mechanism? We're just taking on good faith, right?
We have our code compliance officer.
Mr. Mueller is he's aware of random operation.
I mean, they're a pretty well-run operation. I don't have any doubts.
There, we just haven't had any problems with Mr. Randall's operation on other sites. So I expect we'll have an issue with this site as well. Mr. Mueller routinely fields inquiries about the operation, so he is.
I suppose it would be a business consideration. If you didn't move them occasionally, if you didn't rotate the piles, they could combust.
Get shot and fire.
So that would be a business reason to move them around, at the very least.
And then after they have fires, they're going to get more attention.
Happens every day,
though. Yes, I know.
Happens every day.
Does anybody have any more questions for Mr. Newman or from the applicant? Okay, if not, do we need to have any discussion about this? I do see, like I said, that they met the fire department, the VIC, to think of most of its internal and so forth like that. The question about the moving the piles, I thought that was a great idea because I've seen mulch piles on fire before. There are a lot of smoke and sometimes a lot of fire. If there's no other discussion we need to have, do I have a motion?
I move that the Planning Commission move to approve SDP 1706, a site development plan, request to expand an existing recycling center's mulching operation with respect to approximately 9.37 acres of Tax Map 5, Section 10, Parcel 6, and Tax Map 5, Section parcel A, subject to three conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Gain for approval. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0 and one absent. Next item is unfinished business. Mr. Robinson is presenting some more on the Columbia zoning that we've been working on for a long time. And I think he's part of the committee there also.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, before I go further, I'll just make you aware that you should be aware that the administration office reignited the Columbia Tax Force, and the kickoff meeting was held back in June in Columbia. And at that meeting, there were 41 attendees, so it was a good turnout from the public. And since that meeting has took place, the Board of Supervisors has selected names and appointed a committee of 10 citizens who will serve on the tax force moving forward. And those meetings are going to occur through the end of the year on the third Monday of each month at 7 o'clock. And the future meetings will be held at the Fulana Community Center down the road in Fort Canyon. So just want to make you aware that if anyone is interested in attending, the next meeting is actually coming up next Monday, the 17th at 7 o'clock. And the tax force purpose, they're still really trying to figure all of that out. And I think one of their goals will be to try to figure out what they'd like to see in the area after some of the county's efforts are complete. But just to come back forward, you should recall we presented you with the draft zoning map. And just want to make you aware that we've updated the proposed zoning map, and now we have two options. Now, the area you see on the screen, this blue area, is supposed to represent the floodplain. So we just have that overlay just to kind of give you an idea what the floodplain is. But the previous map that we presented to you had commercial zoning on both sides of Route 6. And it was staff's thinking from the start to designate everything south of Route 6 as agricultural, since it is within the floodplain. Use is pretty limited as what you can do inside of Route 6. So this map has been updated to show everything south of Route 6 to be zoned agricultural. And in case you're wondering about this parcel here in the corner, just note that that little portion that extends across the six that's showing up as business, that is all one parcel on both sides of the railroad, so that's why there's business in that area. But other than that, everything, and then there is one little small square here that's business, and that's most likely tied to a parcel that's across the river. Everything has been designated based on parcel number. So this is option one. And then option two, we've taken into consideration a comment we received from one of the property owners, more specifically Shellback Excavating, who owns all these properties within this area here. When he talked with staff, he had concerns about being zoned agricultural because he has an industrial operation there. He would like to be zoned industrial when this process is set and done. So that's what you see on the screen, is just an effort by staff. Go ahead and designate those parcels with I-1 zone. So option two accounts for this request from this property owner. So we'll have some parcels on the south side of Route 6 zoned I-1, and again, that's just encompassing an existing industrial operation. And then everything else is agricultural, with the exception of those little depot pieces. So, those are the two options that we've come up with for the zoning. If you'd like to move forward, we have a sample motion on the screen. If you'd like to go ahead and kick off and initiate the rezoning process. And what I laid before you in front of you a few minutes ago is just to initiate the resolution that would accompany this. I can try to entertain any questions you have.
This would allow us to come back with a more formal proposal to do the notifications of the property owner. Basically initiate the process for the planning commission to make a recommendation for supervisors.
One thing you may be interested in knowing in this context is the reference to the State Code Section 15.2204. It has specific provisions for multiple parcel rezonings. In this case, we should call it a zoning rather than a rezoning. And what it requires is notification of property owners at a certain sliding scale, depending on how many parcels are being dealt with. As I recall, it's up to 25 and more than 25. So there are additional notifications required beyond the newspaper advertising.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Robinson or any from Mr. Taylor?
I had a question. Did you say that under this arrangement that Shellback, that all that he requested would be industrial?
Yes, odds, yes.
I won't vote on that because I sold him the property and I knew what he had in mind. I think it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. Actually, this is just a resolution. That's not actually voting on that.
That's fine.
When you choose one of these two options or something else, whatever you all like to do, that's what's going to be. This initiates the process to consider whichever of those you adopt. So if you did number one, for example, Mr. Shelbeck would have the right to come in and say, urge you to zone his property I-1. Frankly, there are considerations that I think would need to be kind of settled. To put industrial property in floodplain. So that's something you may want to consider. But either way, if you adopted with the I-1 proposal, you wouldn't have to adopt it that way. And I guess actually it would be procedurally easier if you proposed the I-1 and then scaled it back rather than doing it the other way. If you don't think the I-1, the other thing to do would be simply adopt the less intensive zoning and let the landowner come in and ask for a rezoning if he had in mind.
I was thinking when I sold it to him, the town still had the chart and all that.
The town had a zoning ordinance at one time.
My question, Mr. Payne, we were actually voting on a resolution for them to bring us the actual
correct
measurements later on. So you would not be voting on that.
We'll have more voting on it to allow
them to initiate the process.
Mr. Chairman, I think you ought to have the map as part of this action. So I don't know that you need to adopt this now.
Okay.
This actually initiates the process and staff goes ahead and schedules public hearings and things like that. And what you're saying is quite correct, and that is you need to know what you're resolving to adopt before you do it.
Well, this was just starting the process where we will make a recommendation, not making a recommendation.
No, this is not, you're right.
But, so we don't need a map attached to this because we don't know what that map
is. No, I think you do. This is what initiates the notifications for property owners and whatnot. And the property owners' notifications don't mean anything if they don't know what you're proposing.
So in other words, would we be attaching both maps and then have a public hearing to decide which one we choose?
Well, that would be unusual to do it that way. You can change it as long as you don't do it to a more intensive category. That's why I suggest if you may be willing to consider this I-1, you're probably better off to initiate the process showing the I-1, then you can scale it back without having to re-advertise it.
I don't know that I would, if we can have a way to not delay this tonight, because I think it would be good to next Monday be able to tell those folks on the task force, we started something, here's what we're looking at. Could we attach one of those maps to this motion?
If that's what you want to do, yeah.
So we'd probably be best to attach the most intensive one. If we to change it, we can.
You can change it, but you have to re-advertise it. So if you propose it for A1, re-advertise that and do the public hearing.
Okay, so another question.
I want, it's easier to go from proposing the more intensive
so that's
not
what
even saying.
Yeah, so let's put it off and let's say next Monday we show them the people on the task force, both of the maps, and get feedback and then potentially come back next month with this motion where we can possibly attach a map to it.
Depends on what you want to do. But
the,
I think when you adopt this, you should know what you're proposing.
In other words, another question I have is that piece of property is already being used for industrial. Would that be grandfathered?
Yeah, it would be lawfully non-conforming.
But the current use, if they change to a different industrial use?
Yeah, if it's substantially different, it would not have the non-conforming status, that's right.
If he sold it to someone else.
Sale doesn't make any difference, it's the use.
So, no matter which one we did, he could still use it for what he's using.
Yes, basically.
Well, all of the lots currently are industrial, or just some of the lots?
There is no zoning.
There's not zoning anything.
There was a zoning ordinance. I saw it.
You keep saying that.
And I actually had a copy of it one time, but I don't know where it is. And of course, that mattered now because the town's been abolished, so its ordinances have gone away.
Probably next to the lots are.
Could be. But this, I will say, tell you that this is the first time in my experience in Plymouth Madison County of having land which is not subject to the zoning ordinance being made subject to.
So how is it grandfathered if there is no zoning?
Because that's what the non-conforming provision is for. When you have a use that's actually in existence, it's a little bit broader than that, but basically a use that's in existence is conforming to whatever zoning there is, and he conforms to the zoning there is because there is no zoning, then you apply zoning which would not allow what he's doing. He can continue to do what he's doing, can't expand, that sort of thing, but then he can continue to exist for as long as he's there. So if you had a blacksmith shop, that's permitted in I-1, it's not permitted in A-1. You continue with your blacksmith shop. If you wanted to retire and sell it to somebody that built racing engines, it may not be appropriate. He wants to pack meat in your abattoir or something. That wouldn't be permitted.
Yep, that answers your question.
I would still like us to make this motion and attach the most intensive use map to this now. I think there's value in that.
To get the process started.
To get it started, to commit to the citizens that we're making some progress. Form this task force. I mean, we don't have to do it this month. I understand that. I think it would be a good thing to do if unless Mr. Payne recommends strongly against that action.
No. Steps? Prepared to support both, either of the maps. Whether you got it before, you just pick one you want.
If it's switched to agricultural, it doesn't need to be, because it's the most intensive
You can modify the proposal as long as it's not more intensive.
I think we should attach the map that's the most intensive and go forward tonight. That's my opinion.
I agree. I'm glad to make that motion.
In the discussion, do you have a preference, Mr. Gaines?
My preference is to go ahead and show the task force both options and present the motion next month.
If I can comment, the task force has seen both of these.
In the discussions of the task force, I don't know why I'm supposed to ask this question. In discussions of the task force, did anybody on the task force have objections and more intentions?
We really didn't get a lot of feedback as far as what zoning they favored.
So if we go ahead with this, it would be proper for Mr. Johnson to abstain, or could he?
Did I understand that you were the agent?
I was the agent, but he's getting, if he does it more intensive, like we're talking about the industrial, he was concerned that he couldn't continue operating there if anything happened in the town, you know.
Well, so, if you're interested in his property, it's simply that you dealt with it in the past, but I don't think that's a conflict. That's okay.
Well, I think he'd be perfectly happy with it. I can't see why he wouldn't. I'm okay with that.
I don't. I think we should need to try to go forward to it. So, if we are going forward to it, do I have a motion?
Sure. So, I move that the Planning Commission, pursuant to Section 2220-1 of the Fluvanna County Code, initiate an amendment to the Fluvanna County zoning map in order to establish county zoning districts on all parcels within the limits of the former town of Columbia, and direct staff to schedule a future public hearing for formal Planning Commission consideration of recommendations of Board of Supervisors in accordance with Virginia Code Section 15.2-2204. And as part of this motion, I would move that we attach the more intensive zoning map that includes the I-1 zoning for those parcels south of Route 6. So it would not be that map. It would be that map.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer, also attaching option 2 map to this resolution. Do I have a second?
I'll go ahead and second.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. I have a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0, 1 absent.
Mr. Chairman, before you get up and walk away, can I give you a little historical tidbit about that map you see there?
Yes, sir.
It seems funny in some sense to have agricultural zoning in a more settled area. Even Columbia is not exactly New York City, but it is a settlement of sorts. But just to show you that you're not out of line in doing this, in some of the research I did in connection with the town of Columbia, I came across a petition to the General Assembly in, I think it was 1826, or something like that, asking that the General Assembly amend the charter to the town, because the charter required that each of the lots, and you see they're marked in those squares, each of the lots, they were sold off to the public, but it required that each lot be improved within a specific time. I think it was 6 months or a year or something like that. And that if you didn't improve it within that time, you forfeited your right to the land and went back to be sold again. And this petition pointed out that a lot of the lots in the lower area here that are proposed for agricultural zoning, for us, Miles, and our staff, this petition proposed to remove those parcels from the town so they wouldn't be subject to that requirement, because the only thing they were fit for was agriculture. So if you bought a lot so and so down at the bottom here, you were not going to build a house on it. And if you did, it was probably going to be flooded away. And the man that said that turned out to be right. But I just thought you'd be interested in a little historical tidbit about that.
And didn't the lots of something at one time go to the middle of the street or something?
They still do.
Okay.
The other historical tidbit about it, just if you're interested, when the last amendment to the charter was done, I want to say it was in the 1880s, there was a provision added to it address that very issue. That normally, if you build a building within the limits of a public street, you may own the underlying fee of the street, you probably do, but you're not entitled to build on in a way to obstruct the street. And the General Assembly tinkered with the Columbia Charter to allow buildings that hadn't been built within public streets to remain as long as they didn't inhibit traffic on the streets, most of which were never developed, so they wouldn't have. So we see that today where there are actually buildings that are built on some of the demarcated but undeveloped streets. So that shows you how particular these things can be.
That was when you rode your horse down that back foot that time, right?
You'd ride your horse, but you couldn't take your four horse carriage.
He said this when you rode your horse down. That's what he said. You specifically.
So y'all get credit for the history.
All right, so